This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
Right through the Sedra, we find conflicting Chazal as to the stature of Noach. And Rashi brings it right at the very beginning. Ele toldos Noach, these are the generations of Noach, and we're told Noach ish tzadik tomim hoyo b'doyresov. Noach was a righteous and complete man in his generations. Eso elikim his halech Noach. Noach walked with the Ribbono Shel. On the surface, there can be no more glowing praise for a human being than that. It's incredible. Who would want anything more to be said about them than that they're a tzaddik and a tumim? Unklus translates a tzaddik as zakai. He's got zechus. He's done what he's done. He's been good. Shelim tzad and tumim means he's complete. He's whole. He's perfect. He walked with the Ribbono Shel Olam. On the surface, these are incredible praises. There's nobody else really in the whole Torah who gets this kind of treatment, who is praised to this degree and to this extent. And yet we find in the Medrash, the Rashi brings it in part, two views as to whether it was such fantastic praise or not. Why, asks the Medrash, does it say that he was a tzaddik b'doyro yisov in his generation? Why doesn't it just say he was a tzaddik? Sometimes when you praise, the less you say, the better. Sometimes as you start adding and adding and adding, you in fact are detracting and you're making it worse. And sometimes the sooner you stop, the better. Sometimes if you hear people giving votes of thanks and things like that, it can be very thing and embarrassing. They just don't hear what they're saying themselves. You just think to yourself, only they would stop now. It's just, it's okay. Let's just stop. And they go on and on and on and on. And the more they say, the worse it is. And it's a little bit like that here. Tzaddik, fantastic, a tzaddik. A tomim. Ish tzaddik tomim is perfect, wonderful. Don't add hoyo b'doyro yisov. What do we need to be told that it was in his generation that he was a tzaddik? Yeah, David, you've got a mokum kabua here for you. So there are two views in the Medrash. It's a famous Medrash. And we're going to have to look at it under a magnifying glass. Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Nechemia. Two tanoim. Rabbi Yehuda Omer b'doyro yisov hoyo tzaddik ho'ilu hoyo b'doyro shel Moshe b'doyro shel Shmuel hoyo tzaddik. You see the power and the strength and the brave, the degree of the braveness of these people at Tanoim. He, Rabbi Yehuda, confronts it straight off, and he says, "Yes, what is it coming to tell us? He was a tzaddik in those generations. What kind of a human being would he have been had he lived in later generations? Had he lived in the time of Avraham? Had he lived in the time of Yitzchak, of Yaakov, of Moshe, of Shmuel? Would he then have been such a tzaddik?" Says Rabbi Yehuda, "No, he would have been an ordinary person. He wouldn't have been worthy of being saved in the flood. He wouldn't have been anything particular at all. But don't I say, in those generations when everybody else was such a rosha, he was a tzaddik. Thank you very much." That's what it's coming to tell you. He was nothing spectacular. In an absolute sense, in a real sense, Noach was nothing really special. In his generation, he was a great man. Bashuk Samia, in a place, if you go into a home for the blind, Tzvochim La'avario, if a semi-blind person comes into the home, they shout out, "Sagi, no, there's somebody who can see around here. Fantastic, there's somebody who's got good sight." It's all relative. To us people who can see, Baruch Hashem, the man who can hardly see and he goes with thick glasses and he can't look in front of him and he goes with a stick and he can just see vaguely, we call him blind. But in a home for the blind where other people can't even see light and he can at least see movements of light, they say, "Oh, here's a man who can see. He knows when it's light, he knows when it's dark. Fantastic, we've got with us somebody who can see." It's all relative, it depends. That's what also, you know, part of this vote of thanks business, when you see that somebody says, "Ah, so-and-so, such a tzaddik." Depends what your standards of tzaddikim are. Depends who you're used to. Depends what you're judging. The word tzaddik is a very relative term. If from Sodom they would say, "Ah, so-and-so, such a tzaddik," it wouldn't mean very much. It depends who says that he's a tzaddik. Tzaddik is something which is very relative. It depends what you see as a tzaddik. Most people see themselves as a tzaddik, so if they comment about somebody else that is a tzaddik, it means that they're commenting about somebody else that is as good as them. For example, somebody had a store of wine, a cellar of wine. He has some guests and he opens a barrel of wine and he finds it a bit sour. Shnio came, the second one, the same thing. The third one he finds is just beginning to go sour. It's not quite sour yet, it's still quite palatable, but it's good, going sour. Omru le koses, says the guest at his table, saying it's going sour, no good. Omalev itacha tazmina, so he says to them, do you think there's anything better than this? Omru le lo, they admit no, nothing better than this, so we better be satisfied with it. Kach b'doreisov hoyot tzaddik. So Noach in his generations was a tzaddik. When the Ribbono Shel Olam looked around for somebody to save, the best he could find was Noach. Hoyilu hoyo b'doro shel Moshe. But if he was in the generation of Moshe, b'doro shel Shmuel, or in the generation of Shmuel, loy hoyo tzaddik, he wouldn't be a tzaddik. That's Rabbi Yehuda's view. We must keep this in context, and we must bear in mind that even according to Rabbi Yehuda, the fact is that Noach is referred to as a tzaddik, that he was saved miraculously. It's never happened to me that the whole world has been wiped out and I find myself on a boat somewhere saved. No such miracles have happened to me or to you or to anyone that we know. So even according to Rabbi Yehuda, Noach was on a pretty high level. But talking in relation to the other tzaddikim of Tanakh, talking to in relation to some of the great people of those times, then he was nothing special. For us, he would be special. Rabbi Nechemya Omar, no, Maim Bedoyroisav Hoyo Tzaddik. He says, do you realize, what is the Torah telling us? That even in those generations he was a tzaddik. Ilohoyo Bedoyroshel Moshe Bedoyroshel Shmuel Alachat Kama Bekama. Can you imagine what a tzaddik he would be if he lived in the days of Shmuel or in the days of Moshe? If he could manage to reach such high levels of human achievements in a generation surrounded by wicked, wicked, rotten people, can you imagine who he would be if he lived among great people? That's how Rabbi Nechemya sees it. Two completely different observations of the same piece of Chumash, of the same man. Rabbi Yehuda says, Noach. For them it was okay. In those generations he was something. In greater generations he wouldn't be worthy of being saved. Rabbi Nechemya says, Noach. Even in those generations he was a somebody. Can you imagine who he would be in a greater generation? Moshal the Tzaluchi Shel Afarsamun, for example, a plate of perfume, Mukefis Tzamid Petil, with a lid over it, Umunachas Bein Akvoros, and it's in a cemetery. V'hoyor Eichan Oidef, and you could still pick up the smell. V'ilu Hoyor Chutzli Kvoros Alachas Kama V'kama. Can you imagine how it would smell if it wasn't in such a place, but it was in a place more conducive to picking up the smell? Moshal Libesulo Shoyos Ashuruya Beshuk Shel Zoynos. For example, a young girl who finds herself in a red light district of some town, that's where she's living. Below Yotso Ale, in the days where only part of the town used to be a red light district. Below Yotso Aleho Shemra, and she had a good reputation. Despite that, she had a good reputation. Ilohoso Beshuksho Keshera is Alachas Kama Vakama. Can you imagine what a reputation she would have if she was living among people who were straight? Kach, in the same way, if the Torah tells us that in those times he was a tzaddik, ilohoyo bedoyre shel Moshe or bedoyre shel Shmuel, al achas kama vekama, how much greater would he be in the time of Shmuel or the time of Moshe? Very strange machlokes. Firstly, we're arguing about the same man. Secondly, is there really any argument? Who is going to argue that he would have been greater in a greater time? Surely he would have. Surely there's no question about that. You remember the story of Rabbi Yehuda who was having giving Sheva Brochas for his son, Rabbi Shimon. And it was Shabbos, and he was giving Sheva Brochas, and they were singing and they were clapping. And Rabbi Meir walked past and he heard them clapping upstairs there. And he shouted up, what's this business? Now it's become mutter to clap on Shabbos all of a sudden. What's happening to all the halachas? And Rabbi Yehuda got furious. He said, no, they don't even let you live anymore. Everybody's sticking their nose into other people's business. What is his business what I do on Shabbos? And the Talmidim of Rebbe got upset, and they ran after Rabbi Meir. And Rebbe went to the window to look at the sight of Rabbi Meir fleeing down the road, and his Talmidim running afterwards. He wanted to get a bit of nachas. And as Rabbi Meir was running from these Talmidim, and anybody who's had the Talmidim after you,
you can imagine, it's not an easy thing, and one understands why Rabbi Meir had to run. As he was running in the wind, his scarf became untied, and Rebbe saw the back of his neck. And Rebbe said afterwards, the reason that I was sharper than my friends is because I saw the back of Rabbi Meir's neck. And if I would have seen the front of his face, I would have been still sharper. That's the effect that physical confrontation with greatness has on an individual. There's no way that one can compare the effects of visual contact with a great person to merely hearing about him or reading him or listening to tapes of him. It's not the same thing. When you see a great man, when you see a Gadol b'Yisrael, just that visual contact is something that can change you for life. Can change you absolutely. My father, I remember, was in Israel, and I don't remember, he told me the story. It must have been in 1952 or 53. And he went to say goodbye to his uncle, to Rebbe Elia. And his uncle said, "Have you been to see Rabbi Issa Zalman?" So my father said, "No, I haven't been to see him." So he said, "On your way to the airport, I'm instructing you, you must go and you must say goodbye to Rabbi Issa Zalman." And it was impossible. And he would have missed the plane. There was just no question. In those days, it wasn't like there was another plane 2 days later or whatever. It was a big business. And it was just impossible. He barely managed to get the time in just to go and say goodbye to his uncle. And still to stop in by Rabbi Sazam, it would have been impossible. So he didn't. And he tells me that it's one of his great regrets, because shortly afterwards, Rabbi Sazam died. And he believes that his life would have changed. And I think his uncle actually said that to him. That it would have been a completely different story had you seen Rabbi Zalman. Just seen him. That's all. That's why I always say to people when they go to Israel, go and listen to Shiurim of the great people, even if you don't understand a word. You're not even going to hear, just go to see, go to look. But look carefully. Notice. Because the contact with great people and the things that one is able to see is something very, very special. And if that's the case, that a Rebbe can say that had I seen the front of Rabbi Meir, I would have been still greater. And I'm as great as I am because I saw the back of his neck. Imagine how great Noach would have been had he seen an Avraham Avinu, had he seen a Moshe Rabbeinu, had he seen a Yitzchak, a Yaakov, a Shmuel Hanovi. Any of us would have been much greater than we are if we had contact with those people. How much more so Noach? So can there be any machlokes? Everybody knows that Noach was not as great as he could have been. Everybody knows that he was less great in that generation than he would have been in a greater generation. So what is the argument? What is the machlokes? What are those two views? The argument goes on. In the next medrash, and the next little pasuk, the medrash, the next phrase, the argument goes on. Etho elikim is halich Noach. Noach walked with God. Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Nechemya again. We've got Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Nechemya, the same two people. Rabbi Yehuda Omar. Now Rabbi Yehuda, you'll remember, is the one who held that Noach was a nobody, so to say. In those generations he was great, but in greater generations he wouldn't have been anything. Here Rabbi Yehuda says, so now he's got a problem. Et ha'olikim is halech Noach. Noach walked with God. How much greater can you be than that? So what is Rabbi Yehuda going to do with that? Moshal u'melech shoyulu shnei bonim. Says, imagine a king who's got two sons. Echot Godel ve'echot Koten, a big son and a small son. Omar leKoten holach imi. He says to the little boy, he says, give me your hand, walk with me. V'omar leGodel boy v'holich lefonai. What does he say to the elder one? He says, come, walk in front. Kach Avrom shehoyo koyche yofe. Avrom, who had his own strength, God says to him, is halich lefonai v'heye tomim. Walk before me and be perfect. Aval Noach, walk before me, in front of me. Aval Noach, show your koich hara, but Noach, who was very weak, es ha'alikim is halich Noach. Rabbi Yehuda sees condescension in that phrase. Es ha'alikim is halich Noach. Noach had to walk holding on to the Ribbono Shel Olam's hand because he wasn't strong enough. Avraham could walk himself. Rabbi Nechemya Amar Noach, Rabbi Nechemya says, no, Moshe lo yavo shel melech. It's like a person who loves the king. Shehoyo mishtakea betit ova. And he wanted to get to the king, but he was thick mud that he was walking through. He couldn't get there. He was thinking. The king looks and he sees this man struggling to get to him. He says to the man, before you sink altogether in the mud, come with me, give me a hand, I'll help you. That's how it was with Noach. The Ribbono Shel Olam helped him out of the mess. So what is the difference between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Nechemya? Rabbi Yehuda says that he had to walk with God because he didn't have it within himself to walk on his own. And like Avraham and Rabbi Nechemiah says, no, he did have it within himself, but who can manage when you're walking in mud? It's not because I'm not strong enough, it's because I'm up to my knees in mud. It's the situation which has created my weakness. It's the environment which is slowing me down. It's not because I don't have it within me to move forward and to move ahead. That's the machlokes Rabbi Nechemiah and Rabbi Yehuda. And now if we look back to the Tzadikoy of the Rosa, we'll understand a little bit better. Rabbi Yehuda says that Noach didn't have it within him. Yes, he would have been greater in a better generation. Anybody would be better in a better generation. Anybody would be greater. But he wouldn't have reached any special heights even in another generation. He didn't have it within him. He was an ordinary individual, an ordinary human being for those times. I stress again, for us, he was no ordinary human being. Even according to Rabbi Yehuda, he was very great. Exceptionally great. Okay, for us, if he wanted to become the rabbi of Port Elizabeth, Port Elizabeth would be happy to take him, but he wouldn't consider it. And if he wanted to become the rabbi of Johannesburg, Johannesburg would be happy to take him. Even according to Rabbi Yehuda, they would be thrilled to take him as their rov. And he would never think going to live in a place like Johannesburg. Never. He would live in a place like Yerushalayim. And would he be the rov in Yerushalayim? Easily. That was Noach, even according to Rabbi Yehuda. In our generation, Noach would have been very great. But in terms of comparing him to Avraham, to Yitzchak, to Yaakov, to Moshe, to Shmuel, that says Rabbi Yehuda, there's no comparison. And even if he were living in their generation, he wouldn't have featured, you wouldn't have known his name. He wouldn't have been outstanding at all in those generations. Whereas Rabbi Nechemiah says, no, he had it within him. All you needed to become great, Noach had. The elements of greatness, Noach had. But he was walking in mud. There was no way he could express that greatness. There was no way he could reach that greatness because of the situation in which he found himself, not because of the inadequacies within himself. And that is the machlokes. Rabbi Yehuda holds he was inadequate. Rabbi Nechemiah holds he was not. It was only the environment in which he operated. Now we need to understand that machlokes a little bit more clearly. We need to understand what is the element of greatness. What is the point they're arguing about? Whether he had it or he didn't. What do you need to become great? That Rabbi Nechemiah says he had and Rabbi Yehuda says he didn't have. The Torah says that Tomim, Tzadik Tomim, Noach ish Tzadik Tomim hoyo bedoreisof. He was a Tzadik, he was Tomim in his generation. What does Tomim mean? I'm going to use a definition of the Vilna Gaon to understand this Machlokes. The Vilna Gaon talks in chapter 2, verse 7 of Mishlei about two types of people: a person who is a Yoshor and a person who is a Tam. A person who is what Mishlei calls straight and a person who is simple, who is complete. Tam is a very difficult word to translate because it's the simplicity of perfection or the perfection of simplicity. That's really what it is. Yoshar hu hatsom derochov umidoisov besichloi. Yoshar is the man who conducts his ways and his character, his personality, by his intellect, by his sefer. He works out what is right and what is wrong, what needs to be done, what shouldn't be done. Umamidoisom bederech hayosher lufi haTorah. And each situation he analyzes and he conducts himself in every situation according to the way he has analyzed the Torah considers straight. Okay, so he's not working from the book. He analyzes the situation and he goes straight as he understands the straightness of the Torah. That's the Yoshu. Ulezeh Yoshu Iefshal Hikoshu. This Yoshu, such a man, can't really make a mistake. He's always thinking. A thinking man is safe already. A man who's thinking, well, he makes a little mistake, he can correct it. No, he's not going to go far off because he's busy thinking. Thinking about his conduct and his behavior. But he needs Torah. Because if he doesn't have Torah, then he's just going to work on his own philosophy. That's no good. That will be useless. So as long as he has Torah and as long as he's constantly involved in Torah and he's judging things on the basis of what is straight al pi Torah, such a man is okay. He's alright, he's the Yoshua. What is the Tam? Tam is ha'ilech b'derech tomim. He goes the simple way. V'loy sar min ha'Torah yomin u'smoil. He doesn't move from the Torah left or right. V'af b'midus ein esoy mech al sichloi klal.
And even in matters of behavior, conduct, midas, he doesn't make his own cheshbonos, he doesn't make his own calculations at all. For hilich bitzmimus. And he just goes perfectly following word for word what his instructions are. That's it. Elsewhere, the Vilna Gaon gives the example of the Rambam's golden path. He says, for example, the Rambam says that if you find that you're on one extreme of the golden path, what must you do? You must move over to the other extreme. So if you find, let's say, that you're too cruel, then you must be excessively kind. So the Rambam says, the Yoshur is the person who does that. He will decide that the Torah will be satisfied with me moving to the other extreme, although the Torah doesn't like extremes, but as a means of coming back to the golden mean, the Torah will be satisfied. It's a Yoshur, it's straight in terms of the Torah. So he will allow himself that flexibility because he believes that's what the Torah wants. However, the Tam won't. The Tam will just walk down that golden mean. He'll never be to the left of it, he'll never be to the right of it. He'll always be absolutely straight on it. Elsewhere, in chapter 11, verse 5, he says the following. Again, Tam hu ha-hilech bitzmimus. A Tam goes, simply follows the book. V'zeh ha-hilech bitzomim eino semech al-sich le-klal. He doesn't rely on his intellect at all. He doesn't have to. He just does what the book tells him. U'le-derech ha-Torah tzorich gam ha-sechel. But for Torah, says the Vilna Gaon, it's not good enough to be so straight that you just go by the book. Whatever it says, that's what you do. You need more than that. Kemashi omru chazal, as Chazal said, lo'ilom yehe adam orum beyira. You need a bit of slyness as well when it comes to Yiddishkeit and to Frumkeit. You've got to be able to work things out a little bit. You can't just be slog along exactly along the path. And if you've got too much calculation, you might slip up. Ach tzid kosoi megin olof. But his tzidkus, now what is tzidkus? Righteousness. Righteousness is your actions. The mitzvahs you do, says the Vilna Gaon, these are important things. The mitzvahs you do will ensure that this tam has sufficient intellect to carry him through as much as he needs. But the tam who just follows the book, as long as he does mitzvahs, he'll have a little bit more than just following the book. That will ensure that he's a little bit better off. And that's how he explains the pasuk, Tzidkas tomim teyasher darkoi. The righteousness of a tomim, the righteousness of the simple guy who just follows the book, teyasher darkoi, will give him also yashrus. And you remember in chapter 2, he defined yashrus as the ability to work things out. Okay, we'll fit it in a moment. Let's just get the formulas right. Yoshar hu ahilech besichle. And a yoshar is a person who goes by his intellect. Ach b'derech ha-yoshar shelo yisam in derech ha-torah. You'll mean the small, but that doesn't mean that he uses his own intellect completely. He uses his intellect to analyze what the Torah really wants from him. But not that he leaves the Torah alone, obviously. Chas v'sholem, he doesn't move away from the Torah left or right. But he analyzes a mitzvah. He figures out what's the principle, what's behind it all, what does God really want from me? That's how the yoshar works. The Tamim just says, look, it says, you must do this, that's what I do. It says, you must do this, that's what I do. So it's safer that way. That's a little bit of seichel you need, it's the little bit of seichel you get from your tzedakah, from your acts of righteousness. The Yoshur is the man who analyzes the deeper intention of the Ribbono Shel Olam. Elo samidosav besichloi, v'zeu ha'olech besichloi b'kal yuchal lintos ma'atayah. But this is very dangerous, says the Vilna Gaon. A man who's relying on his intellect and is always analyzing what the real deep intention of the Torah is, he can make a mistake. Because he's relying on his intellect. But the righteousness of the Yoshar guards him from making a mistake. So now we've got an incredible structure here. That's how he reads the next pasuk, which goes, Tzidkas Yeshorim Tatsilim, the righteousness of Yeshorim will save them. So let's have it again. The Vilna Gaon has defined two types of people. Both of them good, both of them frum, both of them very fine and outstanding people. One is a Yoshar and one is a Tam. The Tam is the man who just follows the book with simplicity. What it says, he does. That's it. What's his problem? His problem is that you need a little bit more than that sometimes. You need a bit of understanding. You need to understand the principles sometimes. It's not good enough just to follow the book. So provided he also is a tzaddik, provided he also does righteous deeds, those deeds will somehow ensure that he has sufficient experience of life to gain a little bit of wisdom
He won't be a complete nar. He won't be a complete naive and foolish person. He will have a little bit, enough depth to carry him through. The other kind of person is a yoshar. A yoshar is a man who analyzes the deeper principles behind every mitzvah. He wants to know the whys and the wherefores. He wants to understand what it is that the Torah really wants from us. His danger is that he might take his intellect too far. And he might be so involved with his own ideas that he moves away from the accurate and authentic interpretation of the Torah. So for him also, tzidkas yishorim tatzilem, as long as he's a tzaddik, as long as he's involved in actions which are good, that will save him. I think the psychology of this principle is very simple. The big problem, particularly in the second part that we just mentioned, tzidkas yishorim tatzilem, the righteousness of the straight people will save them. The danger of the yeshorim, the danger of the philosophers, the intellectuals, the people who are always analyzing, is that they're going to analyze in order to justify their actions. That's the main problem. Whatever one does, one has a tendency to want to find justification. And if you do wrong, if you're not a big intellect and you do wrong, and somebody comes and says, but tell me, how could you do that? It says here in the Shulchan Aruch that you're not allowed to do it. What will you say if you're a Tam? Oy, 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 I didn't know. I'll do tshuva. I didn't know such a thing. You're right, it says here you mustn't do it. That's what a Tam would do. You come to a Yoshar, when you come to the big intellect already, he starts looking and he says, well, you know, you've got to understand the Shulchan Aruch, and it doesn't apply in all situations, and there are other views, it's not so simple. Why? Why are you going to all that trouble? Because he's already done wrong. And the tendency is to use one's intellect to justify what one's already done. Therefore, tzidkas yoshorim tatzilem. If a yoshor is a tzaddik, he's safe. If everything he does is right and spot on, then his intellect will remain straight. The moment he starts doing things that are incorrect, his intellect becomes twisted and distorted, as it is used more and more to justify his perverted actions, rather than to search for the truth and to analyze what is really expected of him. Tzidkas yeshorim tatzilem. It's the tzedakah, it's the righteous acts of the yeshorim which will save them. And contrarywise, the same applies to the tam. That the tam, the man who just he follows the book, sometimes you need a little bit more than that. So if he's a tzaddik, he'll get that little bit more as well. He'll understand that you sometimes need to go a little bit deeper. In his desire to act correctly, he will search deeper and he'll go a little bit deeper. Now, if that's what tam means, let us adopt the Vilna Gaon's definition of a tam. If that's what a tam means, then tzaddik ish tzaddik tomim hoyo bedoyrosov. What is that telling us? That Noach was an ish, he had tamimus, he was a tam. That means he was the kind of person, he wasn't the intellect. He wasn't the philosopher. He wasn't the analyzer. He did what he was told. That's what he did. And as long as he knew with clarity what was expected of him, that's what he did. What's the danger in such a man? The danger in such a man is that ultimately you'll find yourself in a situation, as the Vilna Gaon said, when you need a bit of seichel, when you need a bit of deep thought. In order to know what's right and what's wrong, you're going to have to analyze. It's not always so simple. You can't always just look at the bottom line and say that's what the din is. There are times when you need to think a little bit more deeply than that. And in such situations, Noach is going to run into difficulty. And let's see how Noach performs in exactly such a situation. Noach, you'll remember, when he comes out of the ark, plants a vine. And he's criticized for that. And it leads to a lot of trouble later on. In fact, I guess that according to those who say that the African nations are descended from Canaan, one can say that the planting of that grapevine created the problems which we face in this country today. Ad kadei kach. That led to the performance of Ham and Canaan and the curse that he gave to Canaan and the whole thing, one after another. Vayachel Noach, it says that Noach began, but it uses the word Vayachel. Nitchalel v'naasechuli, Noach became a secular man. First thing he does, he comes out of the ark. What does he do? Al-Chaim. It's secular. That's not Yiddishkeit. First thing you do out of the ark, Al-Chaim. Lama v'yitakorim, because he planted a vineyard.
Couldn't he find anything else to plant? Shushel takona, something that would improve the world. Lo yichur shel zayis v'lo grufe shel teina. Couldn't he find the branch of an olive tree or of a fig tree? And yet we're told further on in the Midrash, this is in the Yalkut, Motzo gefen shegerufo migan eden v'eshpiliseo imo.
He found when he came out of the ark a branch from a vine from Gan Eden. That's what he found lying there.
V'shosal mipeiroseho, and he planted the seeds. V'ochal, and he ate from the grapes. V'somach belibo, and he was happy in his heart. Now what's such a terrible thing?
What would you or I do? We come out of the ark and the first thing you find, a branch, mamash mina shamayim.
The world is desolate, it's destroyed, nothing. You come out and there's a branch, and you go and you have a look at it, and it's a vine with grapes on it. You haven't seen fresh vegetables for over 40 days. How long was he in the ark? For months and months he was in the ark. You haven't seen fresh fruit and vegetables for ages.
You come out, there's fresh fruit, and what fresh fruit? Not from the market, from Gan Eden. The last remnant of Gan Eden, there's one thing that's left over.
And you think to yourself, my goodness, what a godsend. I can plant this and at least there's something in the world. Who knows what else there is? But at least there's something even from Gan Eden. And I can make Kiddush. There's wine. I can drink a L'chaim to the Ribbono Shloim. I can say Kiddush. I can make a Shechiyonu. Wonderful. I've got wine to pour over the sacrifices. It was all 100% L'shem Shemayim. So surely he's correct. The first thing to do is to plant that. If he went around looking, if he said to himself, now what should I plant? Wine. And he would go around all over the place looking for a vine. So I would understand the Medrash's objection. Could he find nothing else to seek but a branch of a grapevine? But he didn't go looking. It was there as he came out. What do you expect him to do? To ignore it? To leave it there? Can you imagine how they would have criticized him then? So what went wrong? Says the Ribbono Shel Olam, Amalei HaKadosh Baruch Hu L'Noach Lo Yalecha Lilmoid Me'odom HaRishon.
You should have learned from Adam, Shulegorim lo yalo yayin, it was wine that caused him the whole Avera. Why didn't you learn? Why didn't you realize? So what should he have done? Not planted the vine? No.
But you should have realized that a vine is a dangerous thing. And it's all very well to plant it, and you found it already, and it comes from Gan Eden. Sure, plant it. But build a fence around it like you can't imagine. A double fence. With searchlights in between and dogs guarding over there. Don't just leave it available to everybody. Careful how you handle it. It's dangerous. It's fire you're playing with. But for that you need deep seichel. For that you need to understand what a grape is. You need to understand what wine is. You need to understand what went wrong with Adam HaRishon. You need to understand the principles involved. What does the Gemara say? That if a person sees a soito, if a person sees a woman who's been unfaithful, yazir atzmi min ha'yayin, he must stop drinking wine for a period of time. That's why Parshas Nozir is close to Parshas Sota in the Torah. Because there's a connection. When you've seen something degenerate, stop drinking wine. It will affect you badly. One has to realize, but for that you need to understand the principle behind wine, how wine operates on a person, how much you can, how much you can't, when you can, when you can't. And you have to know that although you're planting a vineyard and it's wonderful, it's in a vineyard that comes from Gan Eden, and you have to plant it and you must plant it, you should be sufficiently knowledgeable about the power of wine to know how to control it and how to relate to it. And that's where Noach falls. That depth of understanding, that foresight, to be able to see far beyond what he's doing right now, to understand the deep, deep significance of what he's doing right now, the future dangers of what he's doing right now, and how to take preventative measures now for what might happen later. That's what Noach was unable to do. That he couldn't do. He was a Tomim. It says in the book, what does it say in the book? You need wine for Kiddush. It says you need wine for the Korbonus. And here I walk out and there's a piece of a branch of the vine. So I plant it. There's the danger. As a result of that, you know the story, how the story goes on. He drinks the wine and he gets drunk and all sorts of terrible things happen. We see here also, again, if we use the Vilna Gaon's definition, Noach was a Tam. He was one of these straight, simple people in the sense of Tmimus. But he was a Tzaddik as well. What did the Vilna Gaon say? If you're a Tamim and you're a Tzaddik, you're okay.
Tani, if you're a Tamim and you're not a Tzaddik, that you're in a problem. But what did the Vilna Gaon say in chapter 11? That if you've got Tzidkus as well, you're looked after, you're alright. So what happened to Noach? Where did he go wrong? He went wrong in his first Aveira. Where did he do in Aveira? We have one more machlokes between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Nechemiah.
God talks to Noach over and over again. It's God talking to Noach. All of a sudden it tells us, Vayomer Elokim el Noach ve'el bonov. And God says to Noach and to his sons.
All of a sudden Noach is put on the same level as his sons. And all his sons, that includes Ham. Not a very high level.
What happened over there? This is when they were instructed to come out of the ark. There's some interesting words. Vayedaber Elokim el Noach lemor, tse min hatevel ato v'ishtecho uvonecho v'neshevonecho itach. Go out of the ark, you and your wife, and your sons and their wives together with you. Says the Gemara, from that you see that God was telling Noach that from now on he may live with his wife, normally as husband and wife. During the time in the ark it was forbidden. But now, go out of the ark, ato v'ishtecho, you and your wife, and your sons and their wives. And what does it say? Vayetze Noach uvonov v'ishto yinashay v'onovito. Noach became very frum, mechitza. Coming out of the ark. God says, go out, you and your wife, and your sons and their wives. What does Noach do? No, he and his sons, and then behind them, his wife and his daughters-in-law. Mechitza. He's carrying on as it was in the ark. Now, was that great or was that bad? Was he being super frum? Or was he not listening to God? Was he disobeying God? And it's after that that it says, and God spoke to Noach and to his sons. We have a machlokes, Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Nechemiah. Rabbi Yehuda Amar lefi she'ovar ala tzivui lefichach nisbazeh. He was disgraced by being classified together with his sons because he disobeyed God. You walked out with your sons. God says walk out with your wife, and you walk out with your sons. Okay, you'll all be classified as one. And he brings Noach down to the levels of his sons. V'Rabbi Nechemiah Amar hosif ala tzivui v'Noach b'kedusha chas v'sholem. Noach extended the Kedusha that operated inside the ark. The reason he was unable to live with his wife as a normal husband and wife is because of the Kedusha that existed, because of the tremendous holiness of the moment. And Noach extended that after the time a little bit. The Fichach Zocher, who are von of Ledibur. And that's why his sons were elevated to his level and God talks to them all together. Two ways of seeing the same thing. Again, you've got Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Nechemiah. Rabbi Yehuda saying, ah, there you see, Noach again. God tells him one thing and he does the other thing. Rabbi Nechemiah, look at Noach, he's able to extend what God told him to do. Let's take Rabbi Yehuda first. That's where the tzidkus is over. He's now disobeyed God. That's tzidkus. The doing right is no longer there. When is the tongue guarded? He's guarded as long as he's a tzaddik. But here he's disobeyed God. And what happens? What's the next step? He plants the grapes and he drinks the wine. Now he starts losing out. His tamimus, that simplicity, starts tripping him up. Because the tzidkus is a little bit lacking. Because the tzidkus isn't what it should have been and where it should have been. What about Rabbi Nechemiah? Rabbi Nechemiah learns that first posuk a little bit differently. When it says, Noach ish tzaddik tomim hoyo bedoy roisof, there are two ways of reading it. Ish tzaddik tomim, he was a tzaddik and he was a tomim. That's how Unkelus learns it. That's two descriptions. He was a tzaddik and he was a tomim. And that's how the Ibn Ezra learns it. He was a tzaddik, that means the way, according to the Vilna Gaon's definition, that means he was a tamim in essence, that's the kind of person he was, but he was a tzaddik tamim. He was a simple person who did good deeds, who did right, who did mitzvahs all the time. His actions were perfect. The Ramban learns it differently. The Ramban learns that tamim is not a description of Noach. Tamim is a description of his tzidkus. Tzaddik tamim hayobedoy reisov. He wasn't an ordinary tzaddik, he was a tzaddik tamim. He was a perfect tzaddik. But not that he was a Tomim. You see the difference? According to the Ibn Ezra, Tomim was one of his characteristics. There are two descriptions of Noach. He was a Tzaddik and he was a Tomim. According to the Ramban, he was a perfect Tzaddik.
Only one description. Now, so it's only according to the first way of learning, Tzaddik and Tomim, that we can learn the way we've been learning, and we can say that Noach was by nature a Tomim. He was by nature a Tomim and a Tzaddik until he made a mistake. That's how Rabbi Yehuda learns. When he made a mistake, he was no longer a Tzaddik, and now his Tmimus is going to trip him up. His simplicity of approach is going to trip him up because he's no longer that Tzaddik. He's done something wrong. Whereas according to Rabbi Nechemia, no, he's not a Tomim at all. He's a Tzaddik. He's an Ish Tzaddik Tomim, a perfect Tzaddik who never did wrong. And even that coming out of the ark with his sons instead of with his wife, says Rabbi Nechemia, that was no Avera, Chas V'Sholom. It was an Osofa La Kedusha. It was additional holiness. He took the principle, here you see the Yosha. He took the principle that was inside the ark and he extended it outside of the ark. That's creative thinking on the part of Noach. That's no Tomim. That's a Tzaddik V'Yosha. That's a straight person. And a Tzaddik. So why did he later fall? What went wrong? According to Rabbi Yehuda, what went wrong is he was walking a tightrope. He was a Tomim. And a Tomim is safe as long as he's a Tzaddik as well. The same as a Yosher is safe as long as he's a Tzaddik as well. They both need to be guarded by being a Tzaddik. A Yosher, an intellect who isn't a Tzaddik, will use his mind to distort the truth in order to justify his actions. A Tam who isn't a Tzaddik will not appreciate the deeper meanings of the mitzvahs and he'll do them incorrectly. So as long as he was a Tamim and a Tzaddik, he was okay. The moment he did wrong, the moment he disobeyed, which the Medrash says he did according to Rabbi Yehuda, when God commanded him to come out of the ark with his wife, and he didn't, he made a mechitza, that was wrong, it wasn't correct, and that's when he loses his tzidkus. Losing his tzidkus makes him a tam without being a tzaddik. Being a tam without a tzaddik, you run the risk now that you're not going to understand the deep intention of God. So when you see the branch of a grapevine outside your ark, you say to yourself, min ha-shamayim, and you're right, it is min ha-shamayim, it is from God. But oh, stop a bit and think. How do you have to look after wine? It's all very well having wine in your house, but you've got to keep it locked. It can't just be used in an ordinary fashion. And that Noach didn't perceive because he was a tamim and he had lost his tzidkus. But according to Rabbi Nechemia, that he was a tzaddik. And the word tamim in the first sentence is not a description of Noach, but it's a description of his tzidkus. Where did he go wrong and what went wrong? We have the real statement of what went wrong in that same Yalkut, where the Medrash says the following. Choviv hayo Moshe min Noach. Moshe Rabbeinu was dearer to the Ribbono shel Olam than Noach. So firstly you see already that the Medrash is taking the line that there was a Havamina that they were equally dear. So one mustn't belittle Noach even according to Rabbi Yehuda. But still, Choviv Moshe min Noach. Noach was dearer than Noach. Moshe was dearer than Noach. Why? Listen to this carefully. Mishenikro ish tzaddik, after being called a tzaddik, nikro ishu adoma, he is later on called a farmer, an ishu adoma, man of the earth. Is that a rise or a descent? There's some very nice farmers. One can be a very nice farmer, but after you being described as a tzaddik, to be described as an ishu adoma, that's a descent. And what's with Moshe? He also was called unpleasant things at times. Moshe in the beginning was called an Ish Mitzri, and some of you might remember the criticism that the Medrash leveled against him. The daughters of Yisroel called him an Ish Mitzri. They said to Yisroel, an Egyptian man saved us. And the Medrash criticizes Moshe for being mistaken as a Christian, as a Mitzri, an Egyptian, and for allowing that mistake to go without correcting it and say, I'm no Mitzri, I'm a Jew. And they criticize him, and the Medrash says for that reason he wasn't buried in Eretz Israel. So after being called an Ish Mitzri, which is worse, to be called an Ish Mitzri or to be called a farmer? What would you say? As bad as it is to be called an Amoret, which after all is what an Ish Adoma is, to be called an Ish Mitzri is worse. In those days, an Egyptian, absolutely no moral standard did he have at all. A farmer is something, but an Ish Mitzri, nothing. So Moshe was called something worse than Noach, an Ish Mitzri. But after that, Ish Ha'elokim. Later on, what is he called? A man of God. Is that a descent or an ascent? That's an ascent. So what's the difference between Noach and Moshe? Not who was greater. That's not what we're interested in. Different people have different potentials. We're not here to judge who's greater than who. The most important thing to judge is, are we moving upwards are we moving downwards? If we're moving upwards, we're great. If we're moving upwards, there's no limit to what we can achieve. If we're moving upwards, we're doing what the Ribbono Shel Olam wants of us. It doesn't matter where we are now. We're going, we're moving, we're improving, we're growing. If we're moving downwards, there's no limit to how low one can get ultimately. And it doesn't help saying, I used to be a tzaddik. It doesn't help saying, I come from the Haim. It doesn't help saying, when I was in the Haim, I learned in yeshiva. It doesn't help saying, when I learned in yeshiva, I knew more than you'll ever know. That doesn't help. At the end, what's important is, am I moving upwards or am I moving downwards? Am I increasing my standards or am I decreasing my standards? That, says the Medrash, was the difference between Moshe and Noach. Moshe was called an Ish Mitzri. How low can you get beyond being called an Ish Mitzri? But that was at the beginning of his career. At the end of his career, he's called an Ish Hoyalukim, a man of God. Noach was called an Ish Tzadik, a Tomim. How higher can you get than that? But that was at the beginning of his career. At the end of his career, he was called an Ish Adoma. He was an earthy man, a man of the land. That's a downward movement. According to Rabbi Yehuda, we understand what caused that. According to Rabbi Yehuda, he was a Tam, he didn't have the creative ability of an Avraham Avinu. He didn't have the ability to direct his behavior by his intellect. He went by the simple understanding, what he was told to do, that's what he did. And the moment he had to use his intellect to really understand what to do, that's when he slipped up. Because he lost his tzidkus. That's how we've learned according to Rabbi Yehuda. But according to Rabbi Nechemiah, what caused the decline? He starts off as a tzaddik, as a tummy. And Rabbi Nechemiah holds that he had all the ingredients of greatness. What caused the decline that ultimately is called an Ish HaAdama? That he qualification as a tzaddik, as a tummim, and is now called an Ish HaAdama. Imagine how frightening it would be if one's university degrees changed as one went through life. Now you start off as an MA, and then, depending what happens with you, you can become a professor later on. Just imagine you have your visiting card and you look at it one morning and you say, my goodness, I'm sure it said MA yesterday. Today it says doctor. Fantastic. And you look at it a year later and you say, oh, look at your headed paper, you're about to sign a letter. And you say, my goodness, it used to say doctor. All of a sudden, professor. Amazing. And imagine if you start off professor and you look at it a year later, like the picture of Dorian Gray. And a few years later, professor's rubbed out, there's no professor there anymore, now you're the doctor, and after that there's no doctor anymore, now you're just an MA, and then you're not that anymore, and afterwards you haven't got a matric certificate anymore, and at the end it says, Reb So-and-so, Am Horetz. So it says the end of your name. Imagine how frightening it would be, such a thing. But that's how it works with us, it works like that. Our qualifications, our degrees change every day. You don't get to a level and stay there. There's no such thing. You can be a tzaddik one day and you can be a rosho the next day. You can be a rosho one day and you can be a tzaddik the next day. Doesn't mean because you got smicha once that you're now a rof. Doesn't mean that at all. Because you got smicha once, you were once a rof. Whether you are now or not is a different thing. It doesn't mean because you once knew how to learn that you're a talmid chacham. You once knew how to learn, say you were a talmid chacham. It doesn't mean anything now. Doesn't mean because you once did a mitzvah or you once did many mitzvahs that you're a tzaddik. You did many mitzvahs, you were a tzaddik. Whether you're a tzaddik now or not depends where you're holding now. And our qualifications change, they go up and they go down. And each day one should look and check one's visiting card to see where one's holding today, what one has today. Because it's different every day. What was it that caused Noach Nebuch to go from Ish Tzaddik Tomim? Can you imagine that? When Noach used to open the newspaper in the mornings, even if it was the Sunday Times, and whenever his name was quoted, it was said that the very honorable, righteous Reb Noach, the perfect man of God. And then it would carry on writing about him. And in his old age, when it's something there, it would say, Farmer Noach said. And he would take out the old newspapers, and he would take out the new newspapers, and look what happened. What's that? What caused it? He had the ingredients for greatness. What caused it? Says Rabbi Nechemiah, the environment. He was in the mud. There was nothing he could do about it. We see from here the power of an environment. That one can have all the powers to become great, and one can have all the knowledge to become great. One can have all the potential of greatness. One can have everything. One can have the brains. One can have the money. One can have whatever it takes to be great in whatever way you want to see it. If you're living in the mud, if you're living in the wrong environment, there's only one way you can survive, and that's Es HaElokim. If God gives you a hand, if you're fortunate enough that the Ribbono Shel Olam gives you Siyata Dishmaya, maybe it will help, maybe you'll be able to manage. If not, you're lost. There's no chance of achieving greatness. I think that's something that people need to be very aware of, that the greatest people can be spoilt and destroyed by wrong environment. What happened to all those wonderful Jews who came out of this country so many years ago? The cream of Yiddishkeit. I won't say the cream of Lithuania. The cream of Lithuania never left. The cream of Lithuania, chas v'sholem, they wouldn't leave Lithuania for anything. Even with their lives in danger, they wouldn't leave, because they would rather die as tzaddikim in Lithuania than live as mediocrity somewhere else in the world. And they wouldn't leave, knowing that it was almost impossible to keep Shabbos in South Africa. The cream of Lithuania didn't leave. But still, the Lithuanian Jews were the cream of Yiddishkeit. And even the bottom of the barrel in Lithuania were great people compared to what was in the rest of Europe. Very outstanding people. The people who came out to South Africa 70 years ago, 80 years ago, 60 years ago, these were people from generations of frum homes. And not just frum homes, homes of Talmidei Chachomim, homes where there were Mesiras Nefesh for Torah, where people gave their lives for Torah, homes where there was poverty for Torah, where there was tremendous tzedakah, where there was tremendous chesed. Stop any Jew in the street and ask him about his parents, his grandparents, his great-grandparents, and you'll find tzaddikim. Absolute tzaddikim. And I say again, they weren't the cream of Lithuania. The cream was left behind. That was the bottom of the barrel that came to South Africa. And look how great they were, that any Jew will start telling you about his Baba and his Zayda, or one generation further at most. And you've got tzaddikim, tamidei chachomim, balei chesed, balei tzedakah, wonderful people. Everyone. And they came out here. Shabbos, kashrus, gone, gone. One at a time these things went. It was terribly hard. It was terribly difficult. But still, Shabbos, kashrus, they've come from generations and generations of people giving their lives for these things. And here it didn't last 10 years, it was gone. How come? And yet you found among some of the more primitive Jewish communities, not as intellectual as the Lithuanians, not as great and outstanding as the Lithuanians, some of the much simpler communities, the Hasidic communities from some of the areas, they survived. They went to America, and they went to Europe, and they went to England, they went to Israel, and they were frum, and they stayed Shabbos, keeping Shabbos, and they stayed keeping kashrus, everything. What was different? Environment. They went in their hundreds and in their thousands, and they retained an environment. They lived close together, they established communities, and they lived very close together. When the Jews came out to South Africa, one went to Cape Town, one went to Port Elizabeth, one went to Oudtshoorn, one went up to Johannesburg, and they were traveling around to make a living, and their family was left in Europe. There wasn't a community. There wasn't a society in which to operate. Each one was operating on his own. They tried, and they made these Landmannschafts to try and create like a community. But it was years before they really became communities. In the beginning it was just a group of lonely people trying to cling together. But it didn't have community structure. They didn't come out with their Rabbonim. They didn't come out with their Rabbeim. Their Rabbeim and their Rabbonim stayed behind. They came out on their own. They didn't have a community structure. They tried. They put up a shul as soon as they could. They built mikvahs. They got out cheder teachers as soon as they could. Whatever they could do, they did. The one thing they couldn't and didn't do was create an environment that they didn't manage to do that. And without the environment, as great as they were, and as frum as they were, and as learned as they were, within 10 years it was all gone. Isn't that frightening? That one can work for one's Yiddishkeit, not for a lifetime, but for many, many generations, and it can be lost in 10 years. Baruch Hashem, we see that it wasn't altogether lost, and it's coming back again. But for a long period in between, it was lost. No environment. And each one of us has to remember that. That we can sit in a Rosh Hashanah, in a Yom Kippur, or we can sit while we're learning, or listening to a shir, or davening, and we can reach quite a high spiritual level. Unless we're attached to a community life, and actively attached to it, it's not possible to retain it. You can't just live from Shabbos to Shabbos, or from Yom Tov to Yom Tov. There needs to be some kind of attachment to a growing community. And I talk about a community that's growing not in numbers, but a community where growth of the individual is something which is important, is something which everybody's busy with. And one has to fit into that and be part of that. To merely attend the shul, or to attend the shir, or to attend shiurim, to attend davening, that's not it. That as great as one might be and as clever as one might be, if one doesn't have the environment, if one's not part of the community, the community might not be as great as you. It doesn't matter, but it creates the environment. You might be greater than the community. Doesn't matter. You might be frumer than the community. Doesn't matter. preferably one should find a community which is greater than oneself. But if one can't, at least that there's a community that you're not functioning in a vacuum. And to feel part of that, and to participate, and to be together with that, only that way can the Jew progress. There's no way, says Rabbi Nehemiah, that as great as Noach was, tzaddik tonim, a perfect tzaddik, nevertheless he falls in the end. He starts off as the perfect tzaddik, and he lands up years later as the farmer. That's the tragedy of Noach, because he didn't have a community in which to operate. In Noach's time, it wasn't his fault. And therefore, says Rabbi Nehemiah, he was a great man. And he was saved on the merits of his own greatness, because the Ribbono Shel Olam realized that whatever he didn't achieve was because he, God, didn't give him an environment in which to function. But had Noach lived in a society such as that of Avraham, of Moshe, of Shmuel, then what a great man he would have been. And likewise with each one of us, as long as we're not too simple, as long as we have the elements for greatness, which each of us do, it's feasible for us to be constantly improving, to be constantly growing, to be constantly developing. That whatever profession, whatever description we were able to be zoche to today or yesterday, tomorrow's will be better. But what is required, in addition to our own efforts, and in addition to our own brilliance, in addition to our own depths and our own understandings, there has to be an involvement and a participation in a community of people who are growing together, so as to make the job that much easier and at least feasible.